Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Crocs, Old Navy Outlet, American Eagle Outfitters, Kay Jewelers, and hundreds more. Find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com. Big time deals on big name brands.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today's Wednesday, November 27th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Moana 2, and we'll present some interviews with several of the filmmakers. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editors Brad Owen.
Hey, that's me.
And BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hi.
All right, BJ, you had a chance to see the first 30 minutes of this movie early, and I remember us talking about that on the podcast. So I know that you enjoyed that. So I have a sense of sort of how you were feeling about this movie. Brad, you saw the movie last night. I have no idea what you thought about it. So given the context that this is probably going to be one of the biggest movies of the year, do you think Moana 2 is worthy of that?
For the most part, yes. It has a tough uphill battle because Moana is fantastic. It's one of the best Disney movies that they've put out, in the 21st century. I think it has an incredible soundtrack. The animation is gorgeous. The cast is outstanding. And so it's tough for Moana 2 to measure up to that. But I think it does its best under the pressure. There are some places where it falls short, but there are other things that make it stand on its own feet pretty well. It has a good adventure, it has a big heart, and even though the soundtrack isn't as great as the first one, it still has some catchy tunes and there's some good stuff in it. So yeah, I think it'll probably end up being worthy of being one of the biggest movies of the year.
All right, BJ, same question to you. What do you think?
Oh yeah, I mean, there was no doubt that this was going to be like anything short of a massive success because Moana is such a beloved movie. But I do agree with Brad. I think that there are some moments where this doesn't, like, you can kind of feel that it used to be a series at one point in some of the pacing issues. I'm a lot hotter on the music than most people are, as I've been discovering in the last 24 hours. I understand why people prefer Lin-Manuel Miranda's music, but I really, really like the music that we got in this from Emily Bear and Abigail Barlow. I think it is reflective of, you know, Moana having a more mature attitude. The music is a little bit more mature and less poppy, which I don't have an issue with. But if anything, this movie just reminded me that this is such a rich world of characters and of different stories that can be told. And if they're going to continue tapping into it, at least I know that they know how to move the story forward and not just rehash what came before.
So I'm glad you mentioned that, BJ, because we've talked about that on the podcast before too, that like when this was first announced, we were all taken aback because it was announced, I think in February of this year, that this Moana TV show that they were planning for Disney Plus was being repurposed into this movie. And that gave us all a lot of concern because obviously that does not sound like the ideal way to go into making a movie. But Brad, I was wondering if you felt some of those same seams in terms of like, did this movie feel lesser than to you because of its inauspicious origins?
No, not lesser than. That was my concern going in as well, but I feel like they've done a pretty good job for the most part hiding a lot of probably what the seams would have been. There is a thing where it doesn't quite feel like it's paced out as a movie, like BJ said, but it still comes together and feels like a big movie rather than feeling like a smaller scale story. Like the story feels like it has all the touches that you want from a sequel by, you know, progressing Moana's story, doing something that feels like a big adventure, introducing new characters and whatnot. So I don't think that it stumbles in that way. I think if anything, it just suffers from being in the shadow of the original Moana.
Mm. So I want to talk a little bit about the evolution of the character. I have not seen this movie yet as of recording time, but it's interesting because the first movie came out almost 10 years ago and the same actress came back to reprise her voice role. And so, BJ, from what it sounds like in some of the reading or some of the writing that you've done about this movie that I've read, that I've edited, it sounds like Moana develops a little bit more as a character and kind of like steps out and maybe isn't quite as sure of herself or as certain in her identity as she might have been at the end of the first movie. So what do you think about the evolution of this character? And what do you think about like the voice performance from that actress coming back all these years later?
So Auli'i Carvalho is one of my favorite like young talents. Like whoever that talent agent in, I think it was in Oahu was that brought her to Disney to audition for the first Moana. Like there should be a shrine dedicated to this person because like what an amazing get they got with her, because she also was the like one of the shining points of the Mean Girls musical earlier this year. So she's fantastic. But I love the way that Moana has evolved in that the last time we saw her, she's, you know, around 16 years old. So she's in that like very feisty sort of like, you know, rebellious sort of feeling that you get when you're 16. But, you know, this Moana is now a little bit older. She's like somewhere around 19 or 20. She has really embraced her role on the island as a wayfinder and as a chief. And like, she's this leader and she's really accepted this leadership role. But now things are complicated for her because she has this little sister and there's like a big age gap between her and her little sister. And she's realizing, you know, how serious the stakes are for her to go off on these adventures, because it was one thing when, yeah, it would be depressing if something happened to me and my parents would mourn me, but now I have this little sister, now I have this entire community that is depending on me, and if I let them down, then they all get let down, and like that's a lot of pressure. And so it's about her like figuring out how to navigate those feelings. And you know, the music I think also reflects that. There's a lot of introspection in like her big number Beyond. There's a lot of that, whereas I think like, you know, How Far I'll Go is kind of like an I want song, whereas I think Beyond is like a this is what I need to do song.
Mm. So, Brad, you're also a sibling of a sister. What did you make of that relationship and Moana's evolution in this movie?
Yeah, I like that change in her dynamic. It's one of the biggest things, because so much of the first Moana is her just being so desperate to get off the island and venture somewhere else and, you know, go against what her family wants her to just be happy by staying on the island that they have, where everyone is content with, you know, their little civilization that they've built. And so having her reconcile that, because she does get to be this person who goes on these adventures, and then suddenly having something that draws her back, I think it's something that it hits for anybody who has a younger sibling, hits for parents too, because parents, you know, you go from living this life of doing whatever you want to, and then suddenly you're living your life, you know, for your kids for the most part. And so, yeah, I like that dynamic. And I also like what eventually comes in the story too, when it comes to the introduction of a character who has been barely glimpsed in the marketing and who actually has, and BJ will definitely back me up on this, the best song on the soundtrack. And that serves as another evolution for Moana as to how she approaches her journeys and how she goes about venturing out into the unknown. And so that also creates an interesting development for her as a character as well.
Okay. I'm so tempted to ask more about that, but I think I'll wait until the spoiler section, which will just be like a couple minutes from now. So before we get to that, I did want to ask you both about Dwayne Johnson and the return of Maui. So Brad, actually, I'll stick with you since you're like our resident comedy guy and Maui seems to be a comedic relief type of character. How did that performance work for you this time around and that character work for you this time around?
Dwayne Johnson is still good as Maui. He's very funny. He definitely has the funniest lines in the movie, unless you count Hey Hey's chicken squawks. But I for me, I think that that is one of the areas, the comedy in particular, both in the script and in the songs, that doesn't feel quite as clever or as strong. The songs especially, I think, are missing a certain comedic quality to them that Lin-Manuel Miranda brought to the previous soundtrack. Like, you kind of get a song that's like You're Welcome in style and vibe, but it's not quite the same. But there's no, like, there's no number that really feels like Shiny, where like it's a good song and it's funny necessarily, and it's missing a little bit of the pep that the original soundtrack had. And so, like, some of the fun lightheartedness from the original movie is missing because of that lack of comedy.
What do you think about Maui, BJ?
So anytime they have Dwayne Johnson sing, God, he's talk singing, he's doing his best, he is not a singer. The song that he has in, like, I think that You're Welcome plays really well into, like, letting him just sort of talk sing. And the one that we have here, it's not as fast paced as Face Off by Tech N9ne, which, has a Dwayne Johnson little number in there, but it feels more in line with that era of Dwayne's musical ability here. And as far as, like, the lack of comedy, like, he does have some really good one-liners. There's a couple that made me, like, actually laugh out loud, but I didn't mind the music not having that, like, joyous pep or that, like, a little bit of that humor, because I do think that this is just a little bit more of a serious story for Moana, and, like, it's not a laughing matter right now. Like, I think that's sort of why it didn't bother me as much, but I definitely see, like, if people are wanting more of that, and they're not going to get it, and that's probably going to be disappointing to them. But I do like Maui as a character. I think, like, that is the role that, you know, Dwayne Johnson was born to play. He's so good at it. He understands the character. And the scenes with Moana and Maui are, I think, arguably, like, the strongest scenes in the movie, which makes sense because they've been working together for, you know, over a decade at this point.
Mm-hmm. So is there anything else you, either one of you, think that we should touch on before we get into spoilers? Because I don't really know much about this movie. I think I've only seen the teaser for it, and there's not, like, a ton revealed there story-wise or anything like that. So before we pull the curtain back further, anything else you guys wanted to touch on?
I really like the new characters that you see that go on the adventure with her. I do think that this is where you sort of feel the series, like the bones of the series a little bit more. We'll talk about it in my interview later, but the series originally was going to have an episode each, like, centered on each of these characters. And I definitely feel that in the movie, where it's like, oh, there's so much about them that I want to know that I don't get to know. And it's because that got scrapped when it pivoted from the series to the movie. So, but they are very cool characters. So if you've seen them in the trailer and you're like, what's their deal? I like them. They're a lot of fun.
Yeah. And they're the characters that do bring more of the levity to the situation, because they all have entirely different personalities. And yeah, so that those characters are a lot of fun. I enjoyed them.
All right. So let's take a break, and then we'll come back and get into spoilers, and then we'll play BJ's interviews.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch Giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
All right, Brad, I'm curious about this allusion you made to this sort of mysterious character who was barely featured in the marketing. Tell me more about that, and a little bit more about that song that you were talking about earlier, too.
Yeah, so what the marketing has played up is a villain and, like, or an antagonist that is somewhat similar to the original. There's another like big kind of villain, and there's this like big storm in the middle of the ocean that they have to face. And that's kind of the thing. And there have been allusions to another character kind of like waiting in the wings. And this is that character. And she's very compelling because she seems like a villain, but then she kind of isn't by the time you get around to the end of it. It's very interesting. I'm so fascinated by how this character maybe was different in the series. But her name is Matangi, and she has like magical abilities herself, not unlike Maui. She's played by Aohamai Frazier, and she is basically keeping Maui prisoner for part of the movie. And you don't really know why. And when you find out why, you're kind of like, wait, what? And it seems like she has kind of her own agenda, because she's not necessarily working with the primary villain. And she also kind of turns against him in the back half of the movie. But she's the one who gets what I think is the best song on the soundtrack. It's called Get Lost. And it's a song that like pushes Moana to basically take like the strange path, not just follow like the path that somebody has told you, but to like literally get lost and do something, you know, unexpected and like, and that kind of thing. So it's a really fascinating character. And there's more that we can dig into about that when we talk about the mid credit scene in this movie as well.
So BJ, had that character work for you?
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with this character because she does shapeshift similarly to Maui, and she specifically shapeshifts into a pile of bats, and she has like a little bat sidekick who eats bones. So like that was for me all day. But yes, Get Lost is absolutely the best song in the movie, and it's really great because it is it's kind of a villain song, but it's a villain song in the same way that like Mother Knows Best from Tangled is a villain song. There's something about this character that is like very Ursula in The Little Mermaid, in that like the way that she explains things, it's like, are you a villain? Are you helping? I'm not entirely sure. And then yes, once we get to that mid-credit sequence, the character comp that I compare her to is, she reminds me a lot of Megara from Hercules. And I am just fascinated by this character. And I knew this song was coming because when I did get to see the preview of Moana at Walt Disney Animation Studios, they did have the songwriters come out and perform some of the songs. And so they performed Beyond, they performed one of the other like upbeat numbers that's like more of like a company number, and then they performed Get Lost. And they were like, you haven't seen like really who this character is yet, but here's the song she sings. And all of us were like, man, that song slaps. I can't wait to see where this is going.
Okay, so I guess just tell me about this mid-credit sequence, because it seems like fairly consequential from the sound of it.
So the main villain is who basically takes the shape of like a storm the entire time that like swirls multiple tornadoes and has like purple lightning strikes. You see lightning flash and form into what this character looks like. He kind of looks like a beefy version of a genie in a way. And so he's defeated at the end, and the storm dissipates, and like they do what they've accomplished by bringing this island back to the surface. But in a very Marvel-esque kind of, almost like a Thanos introduction kind of thing, you see that he's still, around, and Matangi is talking to him, and she's kind of trying to like weasel her way out of like taking blame for being the one who helped, Maui and Moana get back together and ultimately, stop him, because she's not necessarily too keen on like helping him, and she's kind of, you know, helping herself more so. And so the idea is that like he says something to the effect of like, this is just the beginning, and so it's supposed to be like a lead into like whatever Moana 3 would very, very likely be. And it kind of leaves you in like an uncertain position as to like what Matangi is going to do and what her role in all this is going to be. And it also provides a fun quick cameo return for Jemaine Clement to reprise his role from the original movie as well as Tamatoa.
Interesting. Okay, so BJ, did you find that to be a satisfying ending, that sort of layup or tease for a future sequel that's so explicit like that?
It did, because on the like the island side of things, it's like this really beautiful, like heartwarming ending where, because Moana and Maui have, you know, pulled this island up, that now all of like the different islands are all now connected. There's people from all over the ocean that are able to connect with one another. There's like this really beautiful like cultural sharing that you get to see, where they're like introducing, you know, here's the weapon that we created and here's the one that you have. Like, it's very cute and like very nice. And then you get this post-credit scene where it's like, oh yeah, yeah, all that nice stuff that you like and that made you feel good, no, like there's an asterisk to all of this. Like, this guy is not done. He's gonna come back even harder. And to me, it feels like, oh, we're about to watch like essentially Moana Avengers. We're gonna watch all of like these different islands have to join forces, work together to defeat this like gigantic, you know, dangerous god. And then as far as like Matangi is concerned, like when she's talking to him, she even says like, I have no idea how this could have happened. And she has her fingers crossed behind her back. So it's like, oh, you are a Megara character. Like, you want to help, but for whatever reason, you are stuck having to like kind of do the bidding for this guy. And I really want to know why, because this character is so interesting to me. And so again, like, I didn't need Moana 2 and I certainly like don't need Moana 3, but if that's the direction they're going in, I'm all about it.
So what did you think, Brad, in terms of being satisfied by the ending?
Yeah, I mean, the ending of the movie is good. It's a fun setup to like expand the world even more. You're briefly introduced into a couple of the other tribes and cultures that are out there as they arrive at the island they've just essentially resurrected. And so it's a nice lead into like bringing a bunch of people together who will likely have to face a bigger threat. I'm not necessarily super keen on like, you know, Disney now having their animated movies dig into like this Marvel territory of teasing sequels, but I guess it's just kind of par for the course now. But I think I'm glad that it's the character of Matangi who is involved in that, because I am very intrigued as to like what her position is and how that character is going to develop, if, you know, as assuming they are able to do Moana 3 and move forward with that story plan that they have.
So any closing thoughts before we wrap up? Any aspect of the movie you guys wanted to highlight that we didn't get a chance to talk about yet?
I mean, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful looking movie. Anyone that was a little worried that the jump from series to film was going to dilute the animation in any way, nope, it looks gorgeous. There's especially some really beautiful night scenes with like these glowing sea monsters that I was really into.
Okay. What, and anything from you, Brad?
No, I agree. I always find myself being in awe of like things that I think people somehow tend to take for granted when it comes to like the beauty of animation, because like I can watch the wind blow through Moana's hair and just be focused on that and be amazed at how they've made it just look so authentic and randomized in a way where it doesn't feel like you're literally watching wind just pour through a real person's hair. And it's same with the water too, like the way that they have mastered animated water to make it look like real water. Obviously, whenever ocean takes the form of like the character who is buddies with Moana, it's not the same. That's more like, you know, a Disney version of the abyss. But
it's like
the
flubber.
Yeah, yeah. But whenever like they're on the ocean and like just the waves and the way the water moves, like I'm always mesmerized, and I'm in awe of how they're able to do something like that.
Awesome. Okay, well, I think that's a good transition into a couple of the interviews that BJ did for the press day for this movie a little while back. So let's first go to her chat with the directors. There are three directors here. I think a couple of them are co-directors, but the folks that you're going to hear from are Dana Ledoux Miller, David G. Derrick, and Jason Hand. So here is that conversation.
So I have a big question for all of you. As you are all collaborating as directors, I would love to know, what is the one area of directing that you're like, that's me, that is my role, that is where I'm the best at? And what is the thing where you go, I need to tag in the other two, that's not my strong suit?
Oof. I've become obsessed with working with the animators themselves.
Yeah.
I come from a I started in theater and I'm a writer, and so I love the nuance of a performance. And in animation, when you're working with the animators, it's like talking to an actor, and you know, they bring so much life to the voice actor's performance. And we get to go in there and be like, you know, I think she'd feel a little more empathetic if you just nudged that eyebrow up just a little, or just like took down that smile. I mean, as a control freak, it's a dream come true. But as a storyteller, it speaks to just the depth and the breadth of what we get to create here.
I mean, for me, we have incredible storytellers and writers. Dana, who wrote the script along with Jared Bush. But I'm a visual storyteller. I do my thinking and my storytelling through my drawing. So I will say, for me, I can, you know, for me, a picture's worth a thousand of my words. And so that's how I contribute. We work together all in the story room together while Dana's writing incredible words and pitching incredible ideas. I'm doing the same thing, but through a drawing lens.
There's so many incredible departments. And we all lean on each other and try to be with each other as much as we can. I love and am most comfortable in the story room. And I love our story team. So much of the humor and the drama really came from individual drawings that our story artists made. And then that becomes the foundation going forward through the entire pipeline.
Beautiful. And so you have so many voiceover actors returning to play these characters that they helped bring to life the first time around. How do you give direction to people who've already played these characters and, you know, kind of embody them a bit?
They make it pretty easy.
Luckily, right?
What's true. So incredible is that Auli'i and Dwayne, Maui and Moana have become such a part of who they are. They lived with these characters for over 8 years. Auli'i was 14 years old when she was cast as Moana, and she's grown along with the character. And we all talk about this. The first time they walked into the booth, you know, you're having a conversation with someone, they walk in, and suddenly it was like Moana was there with us. It was like Maui was there with us. And it doesn't take a lot to get them into those places.
Fantastic. And I have time for one last question. This is a question that I love to ask people who work in usually Disney or Pixar projects. This is going to be somebody's first movie. This is going to be the movie that makes them fall in love with cinema.
You're the first person that's ever said that. That's incredible.
I didn't even
Okay, well, process it in real time for me. How does that make you feel to know that?
That's super emotional, actually, for you to say that.
That's an incredible responsibility.
I hope it can inspire them the way Lion King inspired me when I saw it. I had no idea you could actually do this for a living. And yeah, that's what I hope.
I hope they just find joy and they laugh and they cry and that they walk away having an awesome experience.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that's an incredible question, by the way. That's so good. You know, I'm gonna say this. It's similar to what Dana's saying. Like, I love going to the movies so much. It's something I've done and it really inspired me as a young person. I want people to love this movie. I want them to enjoy singing the songs. I can sing every word to The Little Mermaid. I hope people find the joy and the love that we put into this film and our entire crew put into this film.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you.
And then finally, we have BJ's chat with one of this film's writers, Jared Bush, who I think it was like the same day, right, BJ, that you recorded this conversation that he was announced as Walt Disney Animation's new chief creative officer. Is that right?
It was like later that day or like early the next morning. So I'm doing this interview like
within
him.
Within hours.
Yeah. And he is clearly harboring this massive secret. And I'm like, you couldn't have told me that when we were chatting. Come on.
Okay. So he's definitely in a position of pretty serious power at Disney Animation right now. And he also worked very closely on this movie. I think he was a writer and an executive producer. So here is BJ's chat with Jared Bush.
So the first question that I have for you is, as a writer, Moana is such a coming of age story at this point. And I don't want to assume to know your life, but I don't think that you had the coming of age experience of a teen girl. So I'm curious, what mindset do you put yourself into in order to figure out what she's feeling and what she's going through to write the story?
Maybe I have had that experience.
Oh, really?
I have not. I'd say, honestly, I think the way we approach all of our stories is psychology. There is a, I remember distinct moments in my life, certainly like graduating from high school and feeling like, oh, I kind of understand who I am. And then you get to college and you go, whoa, I don't know anything anymore. And I have to redefine myself. And then you leave college and you go, wait, I have to redefine myself again. Mm-hmm. And then I got married and then I had kids. I'm like, this just keeps changing all the time. And so I'd say our approach to this movie, and I think for Moana specifically, is what, that universal idea that you are constantly evolving and learning more about yourself and redefining who you are and what you can be. And there are, sometimes it's not sort of losing who you used to be, it's adding something to it. And that was really important, I think, for Moana moving forward. She spent the whole first film becoming a wayfinder, understanding that was who she was meant to be, but that's not the end of that story. And that's not the end of her story. And what else can she possibly be? What other adventures will she go on? I think it was a really fun launching point for that story.
And I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because I think there's this idea a lot of people have, especially, you know, people who have children that might think, yeah, oh, well, Moana's not a story for, you know, my son, because that's for girls.
Yeah.
But Moana is so beloved across, you know, ages and gender and, you know, nationality. People yeah. love Moana. What yeah. do you think it is about her that resonates with so many people across the board?
I think she's just so aspirational. Like, I think when you see her, she is this perfect combination of bravery and tenacity, but deep empathy. You know, I think she cares about everyone that she comes into contact with. She is constantly resilient. You know, I think that she's someone who will throw herself into danger for the betterment of her people or for her family or for her friends, even if that costs her something. And then even when she gets knocked down, she refuses to stay down and she gets up and figures something else out. And I think that she kind of represents the best of what we can be.
Oh, I love that. And so with this initially being planned as a series and now yeah. getting to be a feature film, which anytime I get to see something on the big screen, I'm very, very happy yeah, about it.
Same.
No shade Disney Plus, yeah. I love you, yeah. but I want to go to the theater.
Yep.
But I assume that means that some, you know, some darlings may have been killed in the process of converting it from a series to a film. How do you decide what gets to stay and what unfortunately is just going to be a distant memory?
You know, it's part of our process at Disney Animation, regardless of whether, I mean, obviously moving from a series to a feature is not something that we've done before, but over the course of building features, typically, we are constantly pressure testing and learning something and figure out what works the best and losing things that maybe aren't helping your story or giving you your characters the arcs that they need. I'd say that was very familiar, although I think from the outside it might look like, oh, this is a very different process. Mm-hmm. I think weirdly for us it was, okay, we're going to make that shift. I think the bigger things that needed to adjust, obviously in a feature, you want your main character to have that big story arc, and mm-hmm. you want to feel that launch in the beginning of the story and then have this amazing culmination at the end of your story that feels like, of course, that's how it ended, but I never saw it coming, and it really makes me feel like I've gone on this journey. The side characters in a series, originally they were designed to, each one had an episode where they were featured. Mm-hmm. Each one had their own sort of featured story, and they would arc within that story. I think that was probably the largest shift for us, is we retained all of those arcs. We just had all of them pay off at the end of the movie versus throughout the story.
Fantastic.
But I'd say, like, across the board, I don't think there was anything I felt like that, you know, having lost it didn't make this story better.
Beautiful. And so when you're working on the first Moana, you come up with these characters and then the actors get added to it yeah. to give their voices. Now you have the voices. Yeah. You know the isms of all yeah. of the people once they get in that booth. Did that make it easier to write for them this time around?
It did.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. In the first film, I was recording Ali and she was 15 years old. 15! And just knocking it out of the park. You know, we spent a lot of time and she did such an amazing job figuring out who that character was, where that sweet spot was. Like, that was really fun. Dwayne, of course, you know, figuring out like who Maui is, where I think Maui really shines. He has this unbelievable way of walking this line between someone who is constantly bragging, but you love him at the same time, and those things shouldn't actually match up, but they do. So I think from a writing perspective, I think if nothing else, it was, oh man, I can't wait for Ali to crush this line. I can't wait for Dwayne to come in and crush that line. And just like, when can we do it? Mm-hmm. So that was a very different thing for me. It's the first time I've worked on a sequel or a continuation story. So that was, for me, just an absolute joy.
And I just have to say, as a wrestling fan, completely shocked that you got somebody who is able to brag and like them at the same time. It's like he's done that for his whole life.
I know. It's a mystery how that happened. I will say that he is... I love working with him because he is just game for anything. He will do, like, I think in the pursuit of trying to figure out, like, how to make Maui as lovable as possible, he is fearless. I think... you saw the first 30 minutes, so you didn't even see where that storyline's going to go yet, but I am very excited for you to see it.
Oh, I can't wait. And so now you have these new characters that are fitting into this world that's already really well established, and they all have such distinct personalities already just from like the small bits that I've seen.
Yeah.
How do you figure out, like, these are the characters that I want? Did you come up with an energy you wanted first, or was it a specific character that was just talking in your head and you're like, I got to get them out on paper?
Well, you know, I think I had the benefit of just having finished Encanto, where we had a very big cast, and you had to immediately understand who each of those characters were and hear that voice immediately and have those all separate. And so having that very top of mind for me as we headed into this next story, building Moana's crew, we knew everyone had to have very distinct personalities, and you wanted those to pop immediately. And I think leveraging off the idea that Moana's somebody who thought she understood who she was, that she figured herself out, that she evolved and she got herself into a really good place. We wanted to surround her with characters that would challenge that. So you have Loto, who changes herself every 3 seconds. She is very happy to destroy anything in the pursuit of evolution. You have Kale, he's the grumpy old farmer, who he knows who he is. He's a guy who lives in the dirt, and he's happy in the dirt, and he's never going to change. And so these are opposite poles, and Moana's in the middle of that. And then you have Moni, who is the storyteller, who doesn't even know that's a question he should be asking. Mm-hmm. And so I think for all three of those characters, we wanted to surround Moana with people that would have an opinion about how we evolve, and is that possible, and what change can do.
Awesome. And there's also the time-honored tradition of Disney animal sidekicks.
Of course.
Love them all dearly.
Great.
They are the shining beacon in any Disney film.
Good.
But the question that I have for you is, how do you decide when you're going to give them a little bit here and there?
You know, I wish I could say that it was like this formula. But I will say that usually what happens is, you know, we have hundreds of people that work on this movie and all of our movies. And a great idea will come in and just demand to be on screen. You know, they're something you never expect. I think, you know, obviously you've seen Hey, the beginning of this movie, and how he sort of finds his way into the story. And typically with Hey, he's not super smart, but somehow he comes across something vitally important and that helps Moana on her path. And I think that we had a lot of people in the building that couldn't wait to see how stupid they could make Hey. And then I think on the flip side, everyone so badly wanted Pooh to be on the boat last time, to be on the canoe last time, and having the opportunity to do that, I think was really fun for people. But Pooh is not great out there in that canoe. But this is not something he should be doing at all. And watching him try to find his bravery, I think is a really fun story arc for him too.
Well, thank you again so much for chatting with me today.
Of course. Thanks so much. Really nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you as well.
All right, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about Moana 2 at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. That really helps us out. And happy Thanksgiving, everybody. We're not going to have an episode tomorrow, but we should be back on Friday. So stay tuned there. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at
Shop the best Black Friday weekend deals up to 70% off only at Tanger Outlets. Save big at Nike Factory Store, Coach, Michael Kors, Under Armour, Polo Ralph Lauren, Kate Spade New York, and hundreds more.
find something for everyone on your list during our biggest sale of the year. Hundreds of brands, endless gifting options. Unwrap the best at Tanger Outlets. Stores open at 6 a.m. Black Friday. Get your savings at Tanger.com.